Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? We like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, joined as always by Chris Novembrino. Chris, I think we need to talk about MJF today. What do you think?
I think we're going to have to talk about MJF today.
Oh yeah, freezing cold takes coming. Or do we want to start with that? Because the banter, I mean, there's no need to banter. There's just way too much to talk about this week.
So. No, yeah, there's nothing really to banter about. Let's just get right into MJF here.
Okay. Let's just start then. When last we joined Shake Them Ropes, we were heading into a very exciting Double or Nothing weekend. And Saturday, MJF no shows, the meet and greet. There are stories going around that he is. That a plane has been booked. Don't know by whom. I will say that there are screenshots of said plane reservation. And that MJF has a flight booked home should he choose to do it. He did not. He came out, took 10 power bombs at the beginning, showed up a little bit less than a half hour before the show, did the 10 power bombs, got stretchered out. Incorrectly, but got stretchered out, left the show. Showed up on Dynamite. Not selling any, or he was advertised for Dynamite, but not selling any injuries. Comes out, cuts a promo, and it's been the talk of the wrestling world. So, Chris, where do you stand on this whole thing?
I guess. If we are pro or con, if we're just using those.
No, like, no. We don't need to be pro or con. We don't even need to go that strong. But your feelings on both both plane gate and the promo, if you want. You do not have to support. You can be you can be both sides. You can
I guess I can give a nuanced opinion here. Yes. But I got to tell you, I have kind of an increasingly contemptuous assessment of MJF's actions over the weekend here.
Oh.
In particular, because I feel like it did a tremendous disservice to Wardlow.
Okay.
When you look at how Wardlow has been a casualty of MJF gate, it makes his actions pretty indefensible. What MJF did here was completely nerf Wardlow's push. Yes, Wardlow's over, but like MJF, especially after he comes out and cuts that promo, selling no injuries off the stretcher job, and makes himself the number one promo in the company, the number one focus of the company, whether babyface or heel, and positions himself against the very owner of the company. It, in a two-night span, made MJF the focus of the Wardlow push and not Wardlow himself. And I view that as just tremendous malpractice to both Wardlow and to, I don't know, wrestling ethics, or I'm not quite sure what the term I'd use here is.
Ethics and carny culture.
Carny ethics, Hawkins.
Carny ethics.
I think that it's hard to justify the actions. Maybe you enjoy the promo. I say, promos are all mixed bag for me. Yeah, obviously his delivery is fantastic. But, like, do we really need Tony Khan to be the Vince McMahon of AEW? Is that, like, really a formula that we think is going to be very good here? Is MJF even a good enough wrestler to carry these 30-minute sort of title matches and that sort of thing? Yes, he's a top-level promo. No denying that. But what he's talking about, you guys all denied me being a good wrestler and stuff. That was the part of the promo that left me particularly cold, because I am not convinced at this date that he is a top-level 30-minute, 4-star match kind of guy. He's a guy who can tell a good story. He's a guy who's a good promo along the way in those stories. But when it comes time for the match, MJF's never been anything special for me in between those three ropes.
I'm mostly with you. The whole plane story, work or shoot, I think it was a leverage move by MJF. And I think AEW was always going to pay if he did pull this. You know, Jeff Jarrett has done this in the past. You know, hey, I'm about to put over your big star. Pay me or I don't go out there. Independent contractor culture says to get paid when you can get paid. I am also sympathetic to AEW's side that, hey, you signed this contract for this much money. We will renegotiate when it's time. I am not averse to either side here. This is not
I just think it's hard for MJF to defend doing damage to the Wardlow push.
I agree in all there
of
too.
This. And I think that if you're a supporter of Wardlow, this should leave a bad taste in your mouth towards MJF. And I'm not saying as in the babyface heel dynamic, I'm saying in the MJF as a wrestling professional sort of context.
Here's the other part I get a little bit about, just the double or nothing and before part of it, which I break this into two different things. What percentage, I mean, look, we know AEW's audience is a little bit more dialed into the wrestling bubble than WWE fans. That's just a given fact. But what percentage of people really, really, really were dialed into this whole thing? That's my question, because MJF came out there and played up the plane thing as if everybody knew. And I'm not so certain that's true. A lot of people were traveling to Vegas when this was happening. A lot of people were in Vegas when this was happening, probably didn't hear.
Bet you a lot of these executives who were there at the show didn't hear, but they definitely heard the F-bomb.
Oh, that's Wednesday. I'm talking Sunday.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking the Sunday pay-per-view right now exclusively. You know, I'm not a guy who likes the work the net type of things. I've been dealing with that since 93, and it's never really worked, to be honest with you. Working the internet doesn't work. It just doesn't. And it's dumb, in my opinion. Now onto the promo. Again, you are absolutely correct. Coming out and no selling the injuries. And this was a problem also throughout the show, including the people who did the Anarchy in the Arena match. Just the WWE style of, hey, our guys are superhuman, there are no injuries,
but no selling a stretcher job. Yes. It leaves a deep bitter taste in my mouth, and so much of my ire towards what MJF has done here has to do with it really screws over Wardlow.
Yes.
Wardlow is the absolute second banana B story coming out of this weekend.
And not just that, he doesn't get a big feud necessarily coming up. His reintroduction after the big win was Mark Sterling and more security guards.
Meanwhile, MJF's reintroduction after the big loss is a feud with the guy who literally owns the company.
Yes, you are correct on this. I'm going to be a little bit hypocritical, I will admit, here. This promo was a laundry list of everything I hate in wrestling promos in the modern day age of wrestling. Because it absolutely, you can break the fourth wall while still being in the kayfabe world of wrestling. You can, because it's been done numerous times, which makes me a bit of a hypocrite. Also, I loved the pipe bomb promo when it came out. It made me excited for wrestling. Although, it did not bring viewers, as many people did. Viewership went down after Punk became the main focus of WWE. That's something that's not talked about a lot. Because a lot of people, a lot of the WWE guys, thought of him as kind of an indie geek, to be honest with you. Not a WWE superstar, jacked like John Cena and all their favorites and things like that.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, though, because it really did shatter the flow of the show afterwards as well. It had this like very Vince Russo-esque energy, yes, where everything else is fake except for what I'm saying right,
yes,
here.
Yes. And this is, I mean, it starts that way. I'm talking to you as Maxwell Friedman. He might as well just done the finger guns and gone pew pew after that. I'm shooting, brother. Okay, great. You heal the company. You heal the owner. You talk about your contract as opposed to, say, I don't know, wins and losses meaning money and title holders meaning money. But you can do that in the realm of kayfabe. Horseman did it all the time. You can talk about work rate in your promo in a kayfabe way. Used to do it all the time when people would bury the Road Warriors. They're just big muscle heads in the gym, and 30 minutes later, their tongues are going to be hanging out because we're better wrestlers. You can talk about being a draw and being in the kayfabe world. Did it all the time. Horsemen on the marquee, people are going to be coming in and seeing us. You can do all this in the world of what is fake fighting, winning titles, and getting more money for it. And they didn't. They did the opposite. They did the Vince Russo style. They did the breaking kayfabe thing. Well, everybody knows this, blah, 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 Jeff. Okay, great. But it makes the product harder to watch overall. It's the office politics crap. It's the, you know, why doesn't he just say, how about my push, Tony? You know, it's the Muppet Show aspect of it that we talk about with WWE all the time. It's all the backstage machinations of the show while the show is going on. And I don't think that's interesting. People might view that as interesting in modern day parlance, but I don't think it's okay. Let me rephrase it. I don't think it's good for the show.
Yeah. The word I would use is constructive, or maybe the descriptor I'd use is constructive. And I would say that it's very clearly not constructive for the show. It was constructive perhaps for MJF in increasing his status in the company, but it was not constructive in the sense that it was not constructive in the rest of the show was uninteresting. It felt fakey wakey after MJF came out there and said, essentially, I'm the only thing that's real on this show.
And gets a big, huge baby face.
And even CM Punk feels fakey wakey coming off of this. And he just won the title on Sunday. We're not talking about Punk. We're not talking about Wardlow. We're not talking about anything else but MJF. I just think that, like, what he has done here is profoundly selfish. I get trying to get paid. I get all of that. But it's one thing to try to get paid, but it's another thing to, like, destroy business for yourself and others, or for others and yourself, maybe, along the way here.
My other fear is a creative one within AEW, is that this is going to turn to a schism like the OGs versus the people that have been brought in. You know, Millionaires Club versus the New Blood type of thing. Every other third-rate promotion, no offense to third-rate promotions, I like them a lot, has done a, look, this guy used to work in WWE Invasion storyline. They always suck. They always suck because they always undermine your product. And these guys are always bigger, and those guys have to win. And the problem with these types of angles is that you have to show that the villains are somewhat competent and able to do a better show than you. on this thing with your homegrown talent. It's just everything about this just undermines everything. And to do this in front of the television executives was an interesting choice, especially with the known F-bomb coming, which they knew because they had their finger on the 7-second delay and cut his mic on afterwards. Work shoots, manipulating the audience. I don't mind doing that in the realm of a story. I mind it in the realm of what is story and what is not. That's my issue with it.
I mean, and if you're going to say this is in service of a story, I would then, you know, pivot back to this is bad storytelling when your focus coming out of this pay-per-view needs to be New World Champion and Wardlow, among others, Adam Page, among others, and you've made the focus singularly around the nebulous morality of MJF.
Yes.
Yeah. It didn't necessarily make me find him more compelling. I've always thought he's a good promo, but I had the same issues with you in terms of the content. Like, was this a good promo, or was this only able to get to where it was able to get to content-wise by using Rousseauian sort of tactics, which are bad?
And this has been my issue with MJF his entire run. I think he has what it takes, and I always use Tully Blanchard as a barometer, to be that kind of heel. To be the heel that no matter how cool other heels are, he's going to be hated by that audience, and they're going to pay to see him beat up. But he always ends up undermining that by doing some sort of skit, sketch comedy. It's almost like you're fearing the heat.
And worst of all, now we have Tony Khan as a character.
Yes, NPC Tony Khan becoming a character.
No, I hate that. I hate that. So, like, the idea that we've moved the camera focus from Wardlow to NPC Tony Khan coming out there and giving us the power. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. Man's got a voice of an angel.
Did you see any part of the scrum afterwards?
No.
He's talking about... Eric Bischoff said something. He just starts dropping F-bombs about how CM Punk, how he's wrong about how CM Punk was never a draw, blah, 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 blah. He's not a compelling on-screen character to me. I mean, he makes Jim Crockett look welcome in terms of things. But I think we'll talk more about that as we go on in the show, because we have news to talk about. As we went to air, TMZ reporting Sammy Guevara has proposed to Tainara Conti at the Eiffel Tower. Oh, Sammy, 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 to quote JR, will you ever learn? A bit rushed into this engagement, in my opinion, but hey, it's not my life. It's not my choices. What have you? We're spreading it around, which is a good thing. It's always good to have PR about celebrity marriages.
Hawkins, when you land yourself a Abraham Lincoln, you gotta...
I like tie. I do.
You gotta, you know, go for it. You gotta shoot your shot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. AEW signings at the aforementioned Double or Nothing pay-per-view. Athena, the former Ember Moon, debuted, as did Stokely Hathaway. Because Tony Khan loves headaches, Roosh from ROH. So far, we've gone through Leo Rush, Roosh, Ivelisse, Tessa Blanchard.
And people
Blanchard's
say Cesaro
like
would be a problem.
Conan. Tessa Blanchard's going to look like a vacation by the time he gets around to her.
And Cesaro not getting the tap here.
Not getting the tap, but yes. I think Roosh and if we can get El Sombra Andrade back, might be the beginning of something cool with this Forbidden Door and Los Ingobernables. I think Athena, as long as she doesn't promo too much, welcome presence, but of course they reintroduced her with a promo. And wasn't the strongest promo in the world on Dynamite this week. And of course, always welcome, always in whatever environment he is in, Stokely Hathaway, a.k.a. Malcolm Bivens. who had just an outstanding video on social media as to how he got back there. Chris, any thoughts on these three?
Okay, so I'll go with Stokely. Like, I love Stokely. I think, you know, that we talked about the Malcolm Bivens post WWE stand-up special thing, and that was fantastic. He's just a welcome presence on television, and I'm sure he'll be utilized to his full capacity here on AEW TV. But when Thunder Rosa is complaining that she's not really getting, you know, featured and getting pushed, I can't help but notice that, like, Jade Cargill continues to get loaded up with more and more accoutrements. And I don't necessarily think that him being paired with Cargill is the best usage of him. I think Cargill's got enough stuff going on. You just gave her the baddie section. Like, how many more extra bells and whistles does this talent need?
I understand Thunder Rosa's complaints, if they are real. For context, What Culture reporting that she was confused and she's been somewhat dissatisfied since becoming champion, that she is not getting more TV time and not getting put over a little bit more. So it's for network executives. And Jade and Britt are obviously the people that they love in that division. I understand. Trust me. I'm actually supportive, because I do think the champ should be the most marketable person in your division. But I don't think Thunder Rosa is right now.
I don't know that she is right now, but I also think that
You should put over the champion strong.
Well, right? No, it's that the Jade Cargill has enough going on, and that she's been getting overpushed as it was. Giving her the baddie section, fine. Giving her Stokely, I mean, I think the thing that she does best, I don't know that I'd necessarily use good, but she does it best, is the promo stuff.
Right.
And Stokely takes away the thunder from that.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I think it's going to be some combination of him and Sterling.
She also already had Sterling too. Yeah. So like, yeah, that's the other thing. I love Stokely. I just think that there's a better slot for him than Cargill.
I would do FTR, but they're baby faces right now. Samoa Joe will be playing the dual role of Sweet Tooth, voiced by Will Arnett and Peacock's Twisted Metal. Character is a, quote, hilarious and terrifying hunk of a man who is as emotional as he is cunning, according to Deadline.com. Are you the fan of Twisted Metal?
I did enjoy a good Twisted Metal game back in the day, particularly Twisted Metal 2. Fun game.
I seem to recall that. Okay, so how is this casting? Because I have no idea who Sweet Tooth is.
I don't know it off the top of my head. Okay. I haven't played that much Twisted
Fair
Metal.
Fair enough.
But like, I think, you know, Joe is an equal combination of emotional cunning, or whatever it was that you said.
Yes, but I think Samoa Joe. Ric Flair is back working with WWE on a documentary project. I believe that's WWE and not Fox. I'm not sure. Let's see. WWE Flair and Tom Rinaldi of Fox Sports will be producing a 2-hour documentary on Flair. Was not said if this is for A&E or Peacock, as WWE is doing documentaries for both. Of course, they control all the spin and they're not factual documentaries. Jeff in parentheses. Peacock will be doing a number of 2-hour biographies, including one on Dusty Rhodes. Now, I was a fan of the 30 for 30 that they did on Flair on ESPN. Ric Flair was not, because it painted him in some negative lights. I don't see the point of doing this, other than this is going to be a Ric Flair. Oh, here's some party stories from the road, and I'm still that guy, and I can still drink with the boys, and I'm, you know, look at me, I'm on my rowing machine and in my 70s. This is a Ric Flair reclamation project after the Dark Side of the Ring plane ride from hell.
And what's so funny to me is, right there in the opening of the preferred Ric Flair narrative, you sort of see the whole complexity of Ric Flair, right? Like, he's for years been selling us this I like to party all the time image. I'm the guy who goes out and drinks with the boys, I get down, and all that sort of thing. And like, the only thing that interests me now in terms of a Ric Flair historical document is a good balanced picture on Ric Flair the Dude, which is a guy with serious flaws who is also quite excellent in the ring, like not just excellent, like a generational talent in the ring. And he had this really long career across multiple generations where he was good in all of them, but he also had these flaws along the way. And I don't think he likes the picture of himself in the mirror, but it's the real picture. I'm reminded of the introduction to Oscar Wilde's Portrait of Dorian Gray, where like he talks about Caligan seeing his face in the glass. This is the Shakespearean character is all like twisted and actually sees his visage for the first time in the glass and really hates it. Like, Rick, this is who you are, dude. This is who you've been, and also who you've been telling us who you've been, but trying to put like a nice little clear coat over it. But this is who you are, dude.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like he wants his image to be that of the nature boy the entire way. He should be a statesman in classy suits. But he's the clown in his 70s dressing up in the costume at fan fests. You know, he should be the guy in the Shatner SNL sketch saying, "Why don't you people get a life?" And instead he's the guy going, "No, I was Captain Kirk this entire time. Look at me," you know, that kind of thing.
No, he's Tim Allen's character in Galaxy Quest, where he absolutely but it's like a reverse.
He loved the entire thing.
Loved it. It was his whole life. Yes.
Yeah. No. That's perfect. That is dead on, and I appreciate both the Oscar Wilde and the Shakespeare on this show. We are a show of literary people. don't want to go.
Got to use that college somewhere, Hawkins.
Very true. W. Morrissey, no longer with Impact Wrestling, appears to be a free agent. Chris, does he end up in AEW or does he go back to being big cast in WWE, in your opinion? Because I could see both.
I could see both, too. I could also see him coming back to WWE and just being a different guy. Like, you know, they just want to try repackaging him as something else.
Okay, let me pause you there. Because Because this past week on SmackDown, we had secondary giant number two, Shanky, become Dancing Shanky, because we can't have more than one mean giant because we have Omos right now. Does he supplant Omos, or does he become Mr. Personality W. Morrissey? Big Cass.
I'll give you another one. What's mafia dude down in NXT's name?
Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, Vinny Boombots. He joins Vinny Boombots' faction.
Well, I think we're already gonna be doing that with the former Fabian Aichner, who is now Giovanni Vinci or whatever his name is they were introducing it. If he doesn't come out talking like Chico Marx, I mean, what are we doing here? Hey, what's the matter with you?
Hey, what's the matter? What's the matter? You could go up against Chase. You
or why? Or like Waluigi or whatever his name is.
Wow,
hey, Wario!
Oh, that'd be great. They all have like the crooked like wah mustaches, like Waluigi and Wario.
Yeah, why not? No, I think he'd be main roster. There's no way he's signed to go to NXT, but I think AEW would be an interesting choice. Problem is, right now you got Wardlow over there, and you've already kind of
who's Wardlow?
Oh, it's that guy.
Any good?
Well, he had a pretty good match, I thought, on Sunday, and then you know Wednesday happened.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about him.
WWE superstar Liv Morgan will make her film debut in Yale Entertainment's darkly comic thriller, The Kill Room, joining an ensemble that includes Uma Thurman, Samuel Jackson, and Joe Mangin. I can't say this name.
Mangianello? Mangianello?
What's her face from Modern Family's boyfriend?
I don't know the celebs, Hawkins.
Okay, neither do I. I can't remember her name. Hispanic woman. That's all I can think of. But yes. Hey, Uma Thurman, Samuel Jackson. But you know what? I'm just expecting her to be like one line or some girl getting killed off. This press release is interesting. It had to come from the company. You know, that's what's interesting to me is now they're plugging these things. Between the Joe and the Liv Morgan, they didn't do jack for Sasha Banks.
I know. It makes me, that's what I was about to say. It makes me think of Sasha Banks.
But of course, those are company good for things. Liv. Yeah, good for Liv. Sad news, Melanie Pillman, Brian Pillman's ex-wife, who appeared on the Raw after he passed away, for those who are completious on the Raw type of side. Brian Pillman Jr. had a nice regretful statement because Melanie Pillman had her demons and basically Pillman Jr. and her never really rectified their relationship, but she was also very involved with the Dark Side of the Ring for Brian Pillman. If you watched that, I remember that Raw and thinking it was in such bad taste. It really was. Vince McMahon kind of interviewing her as Vince McMahon, making her cry on camera. I mean, this was just. It was one of the most tacky things that WWE had ever done. That's my memory of it.
I agree. It's low key one of the worst things that they did in the 90s, just because it was in service of nothing other than like making WWF seem like this very relevant show that was dealing with real stuff.
Yeah,
this guy really died, and so we're really talking about it, and his wife's really crying.
And in some ways, of getting over Stone Cold Steve Austin. In some ways, I hate it, and I hate even thinking about it. So let's move on. In WWE land, appears the tag team unification match for Hell in a Cell is going to be on tonight's SmackDown. We are recording before that happens, but now it looks like that Roman Reigns and Matt and Riddle for Hell in a Cell is off, which means this is what, the third pay-per-view in a row where Roman won't be defending his title. So we're not building up anybody these days, and we don't know when Roman's going to want to work. Somewhat interesting. Also of note, looks like Lacey Evans is back to the SmackDown roster per internal memos. So hey, she's going to appear this week on Raw, and the appearance was just for the Coca-Cola 600 or whatever it was, the NASCAR race. It's a gentlemen start your engines, not to wrestle. I still don't know if she's a babyface or a heel because they've been giving mixed messages about that. Either of these things intrigue you at all before we go into Lazy River, Chris?
The Lacey Evans thing, no.
Okay.
No.
Fair enough. And so now, that is the news bag, news feed, news whatever. Now to the Lazy River of Wrestling criticism. Anything we watched, anything that comes to mind, anything at all in the world of wrestling or even past wrestling can be brought up here. And seeing as we have ice cold takes and also previews, do we want to mix those in or do we just want to run through those real quick here, Chris?
Let's go with the ice cold takes.
Ice cold takes on Double or Nothing. If you want to see my hot takes, I did a show on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel with the Power Bombshells and also Keela Cash. A fun time was had by me. Not sure to them, but it was a fun time. Yeah. So overall, the second half of this show made it a winner for me. But for quick ice cold takes, here we go. Hookhausen pre-show match, everything it should have been. Mark Sterling, outstanding geek. I'll give my things and then you can give yours, Chris. Wardlow defeating MJF. I thought this was perfect. I loved it. I loved everything about it. And I thought, oh man, they got Wardlow over Strong here. Great. Then Wednesday happened. Hardys beating the Young Bucks. I thought this was a mess until the end. Live, it came off much better, apparently, according to everybody there. But man, I thought Jeff Hardy was way off his game. Not going to accuse him of anything. Matt Hardy says he had a concussion. I'll go with that as well in the beginning.
Sounds good.
But, you know, not having your boots tied and then not tying it when you're not in the ring. A little questionable in my opinion, but that's okay. Jade Cargill and Anna Jay was dreadful. Let's just call it like it is. It was dreadful, and the post-match was a mess because you introduced six different people in there in terms of just everything and all these matches, and who are you trying to get over here? Okay, fine. House of Black versus Death Triangle. I adored this match until the Julia Hart reveal, but we all knew that was coming. I think
it was just so obvious, but like it made the match kind of hard to enjoy because you knew this was coming, and when it came, it was exactly what you thought it was going
to
be.
Best a lot of these guys have looked in a long time, especially Pac. I would love to break off Pac and Buddy Matthews into a feud here. Brody King killing himself on that dive. God bless him.
A number of people just did not quite clear the ropes during this show.
No, they did not. Adam Cole, Samoa Joe. Meh. Gotta be honest. Not a lot of heat here. Not a lot of time here. Joe was fine when he was playing old grizzled choppy chop the guy down here. But once they started getting into the choreography, I found this match a little lacking, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it wasn't even up to NXT like standards to me. It was really the sum was far less than what the parts are.
Far better, but still questionable booking, in my opinion. Britt Baker defeated Ruby Soho for the Women's Owen Hart Foundation half of the bracket. Thought this was probably Ruby's best match since coming into the company, to be honest with you. I think she should have won here. I know she got the pin on Wednesday. Whoopty crap. But King and Queen of Prom win. And I'm going to be honest with you. I thought the Martha Hart speech was quite good. I liked that it was a nice love letter. She was having fun. They gave her all the time she wanted.
Martha just seemed like she was having so much fun. Yes. And that, for me, made whatever problems I had with Cole and Baker as the winners, like just doing the King and Queen of Prom thing, it just made it not matter, because like her talking about the silly hats and every next year she wants everyone in a silly hat. I'm like, hell yeah, let's do, like, Owen would love that. Owen absolutely would love knowing that like part of the tournament is that everyone wears a silly hat on championship day, like, and when they were the finals.
And for me, part of it was, I mean, look, the bitterness between her and the WWE is what has given her kind of a dour reputation. This is, hey, I love wrestling. I love all you guys. And I love that you all did this for my late husband. It was one of those things where I watched this and I thought, oh man.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I could see where some people are, oh man, she's milking it or whatever. I go, look, let's give her the time. And I thought she came off great personally.
I don't know. Like, I guess to me, like, the whole point of a wrestling show is emotional payoff. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a wrestling move or anything. It could be like a cool emotional moment like this, where this person, after a quarter century, finally gets something. Remotely approximating an acknowledgement of her husband's great accomplishments in the ring. Like, just now it's happening. Her children have grown up watching her father never be acknowledged beyond this. Oh, it's a bad day. You know, we don't like to talk about it. It's a bad day. This is just, I don't know. For me, it was a very nice moment. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, good. I'm glad we agreed on that. Seriously. Next match, the six-person mixed tag team, American Top Team, Ethan Page, Scorpio Sky, and Paige VanZant with Dan Lambert, beating Frankie Kazarian, Sammy Guevara, and Ty Conti. with the stipulation that if American Top Team won, neither Kazarian nor Guevara are allowed to challenge for the TNT Championship as long as...
What the hell was this match, Hawkins?
Okay. This match and the Kyle O'Reilly match were added for time so that the game... Was it game seven of the Eastern Conference Finals?
No, I've heard that, but it just makes the TNT title seem like the most confusing and least relevant title in the company by a lot.
I agree. That said, I had a lot of fun watching this match. Kazarian being the only babyface in this match made it a bit of a mess for some people, but I loved it. Paige VanZant for her first match, I thought, did okay. The Sammy and Ty thing did what exactly they were supposed to do. I don't know. A lot of people crapped on this match. I enjoyed it personally.
Well, Kazarian looks great. I didn't think the work was bad. I just found the
bickering of the team.
Who is the baby face and right. Who's the heel and why the stipulation with the conflicted interest team is a very strange pairing.
Right.
Like it just, for me, the lasting impact of this match is a diminishment of the TNT title further.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree with that in theory, but I think the TNT title is going to be a hot potato title for some time. I want to see some. Hey, Miro's back. Give it to him.
That's unfortunate. I know. I think it should have a little bit more prestige than this.
Kyle O'Reilly beat Darby Allin by pinfall. Why did we have this match?
I was so confused. It was a fine match. Like they blended better than I thought, but I was just confused why this match was happening.
And again, Darby not selling his arm being pilmanized by a chair. I just, this is my pet peeve for 2022, kids. You got to do an angle where people get hurt. Make them hurt. You know, that's all I want. I just want continuity there. Thunder Rosa beating Serena Deeb by pinfall in what I thought was a pretty good match that eventually won the crowd over, but this crowd was cold for this match to begin with, and then they won them over. And both women, I think, represented themselves very, very well here.
Yeah, went a little long, too many, like, kind of near predicaments or whatever, yes. but a very, very good match.
Agreed. In my match of the night, just a fantastic, fantastic spectacle of violence and mayhem and confusion. The Jericho Appreciation Society, Chris Jericho, Daniel Garcia, Jake Hager, Cool Hand, Angelo Parker, and Daddy Magic, Matt Menard, beating the Blackpool Combat Club of Brian Danielson, John Moxley, Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. My God, 2.0. Bled and bled and bled and got the shit kicked out of them. Pardon my French. I loved the Menard Kingston fight through the concession stand and then pawning him off to Daniel Garcia with the belt and the merchandise. That was fantastic. The ridiculousness of the Angelo Parker, Brian Danielson in the seats where Angelo Parker could get nothing going there. The Eddie Kingston coming out with the gas can and Danielson saying, whoa, that's too much. Kind of interesting there, given that the Blackpool Combat Club were cool with slicing your faces. I guess burning men alive is something they want to do, although I can see why Danielson covered in gasoline did not want that match lit.
Yes, right. It was that, to me, the way I read that, at least to try to make it make more sense to me, was that, like, once Kingston was pouring gasoline on Danielson too, Danielson was like, this guy is just effing crazy. I need to do something.
Yes, I need some self-preservation going on in. I liked the submission here. I liked how everybody bled. I liked how Moxley got screwed over by a thing of barbed wire that he just happened to come in with. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Go.
Oh, watch, it's so good.
Yeah. Go watch the locker room promo by 2.0 and Daniel Garcia after this match. And this is the edge I have wanted them to put on 2.0 in this type of thing, as opposed to being lightweight comedy guys. Absolutely loved it. They should have played it on TV, to be honest, instead of the in-ring promo. They should have just played this and they'd be mad over. But just a beautiful display of blood and violence, in my opinion, Chris.
Yeah, no, I loved it. It was everything that this type of match needs to be. It over-delivered on expectations. I think it had the benefit of low expectations coming in, and way over-delivered. Loved the finish on this match. I just thought it was well done the whole way down. The Kingston Danielson Jericho drama made sense in the context of the match, and the match was really well worked. It was the most complete match on this card, and a very, very satisfying start to finish.
Also over delivering, in my opinion, the Jurassic Express retaining their tag team titles by beating Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland and Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. Loved this match. I thought Starks and Hobbs were fantastic, and Lee and Strickland are smooth as butter as a tag team. And then Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus doing their usual spots, but their usual spots look great in a three-way tag match.
Yeah. Over-delivered, not necessarily because of Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, but Keith Lee and Swerve, I'm with you. Like, they just really stood out to me in this match.
Yeah, and look, this Christian Cage turning on Jungle Boy thing, this makes the Julia Hart angle look like Hemingway. I mean, this is some glacier pace stuff right now.
It's not quite at the what was that NXT UK storyline that was frozen in amber, but like it's
oh, the Kenny Williams versus Amir Jordan.
Yeah, Kenny Williams and Amir Jordan. Yeah. We're not quite there, but I'm starting to measure it on that spectrum, and it's not really, it's losing interest for me as it wears on, not gaining interest.
CM Punk beat Hangman Page clean by pinfall. Hangman Adam Page hoist on his own petard as he tried to second guess whether or not he should cheat to win. That moment of hesitation gave Punk, the stumbling CM Punk, time to hit the GTS for the pinfall. I liked it. I groaned at the ref bump, admittedly. Kind of served the story, though. I dug it.
I liked the match in the early phases. It began to lose steam for me, obviously, when Punk started to botch in key spots. That wasn't great. I can get past that. The Adam Page anxiety, crisis of conscience stuff was too cute by half to the point where I was rolling my eyes at the end.
A little overwrought when they do the emotional stuff with him.
Yes, especially when he's like
the Young Bucks thing. Remember looking at him?
Yes, yes. And I don't think it helped Punk at all because it made his win less definitive. It was more like Page beat himself by not going heel rather than CM Punk won the title. So I didn't view it as a strong title transfer to CM Punk. And I think that's part of why it took a minute for him to like really get the audience to where he needed them to be after he won the title. Punk, I'm saying. I think Page needed to just full on commit to being heel. He needed to like get the crowd to really boo against him, and Punk needed to overcome the odds here and win the belt, especially given the fact that MJF is going to come out the next night and demand that all focus be on him. I'm not going to say steal the show. I'm going to say break the show. You need to have a really strong champion coming out of that. And I think that this title transfer wasn't it.
Lazy River type stuff here before we go into the WWE stuff. Let's just do Dynamite before we go in there. Not only, now that I think about it, did MJF steal the thunder from Wardlow, he stole the thunder from Tanahashi coming out, which was a...
Right, because he steals the thunder from Punk. And like that was also like a weak transfer. So like Punk versus Tanahashi doesn't have the sting it might have.
Also, the presentation I thought was lame. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought it came off flat. I think Tanahashi need to come in the ring and face down CM Punk as opposed to standing there posing on the top of the ramp.
I'll go further. I think a high fly flow, especially after you have the kayfabe shattering experience of MJF earlier in the show, I think they actually needed to touch prior to this match.
I think we can get there. I think this is the right choice, though, for Forbidden Door. These are the two that you need to match up. You don't want Punk in a Will Ospreay or Okada type of work rate match. You need the older veteran type of guy. And I think Tanahashi is the right choice here. I just thought a stare down would have been far more impactful. You have fade off FTR however you want to, and just have those two stare at each other, as opposed to whatever. I mean, Tanahashi was doing the belt motion and, you know, doing his little hand signal and stuff like that. I get it. It just felt like, and here's Tanahashi. All right, goodbye. And you're just like, huh. It didn't feel as big as it should have been to me.
I agree. Okay. I completely agree. I think so much of that's just a ripple effect of the Russo-like promo that you put like after the first seg.
Anything else on Dynamite that struck your fancy? Blood and Guts has now been announced as official.
Man, okay, let me review the card here right quick.
Okay, I'll talk about it. They did not follow up on Roosh. They did not follow up on Thunder Rosa's match. These are the people we want to highlight to the network as our star type of show to me.
I freaking love Max Caster. I did.
Yes.
No, he's great. Like he's just wonderful.
I actually like this combination of them and the Gun Club. I do.
I like it in particular because it's like the Acclaimed don't really like the Gun Club.
Exactly.
But
Billy Gunn loves the Acclaimed.
Yes.
Which makes it even better. He loves them more than his sons because they're not as big as screw-ups as his kids. But yet, he doesn't realize that the Acclaimed hates his kids.
Yes.
It's so good.
It's really quite funny. Like,
yes, it is.
And I gotta be honest, that was the best thing on this show for me.
I agree.
Yeah, because after that, Moxley and Daniel Garcia, like, it after MJF did his promo, I just couldn't watch this show and really fully lock in on Moxley and Garcia.
Okay. Oh, then we will move on to the WWE and its two show weekend that it's having. I'm gonna start with some random notes because we've been sliding SmackDown a little. I'm gonna give some love here. KO and Sami Zayn are absolutely fantastic. Just the Elias is obvious, or Ezekiel's obviously Elias's brother, and Kevin Owens just dropping everything and hugging him. I howled at that. I absolutely howled at that. I howled at, of all things, Tozawa and Tamina in the whole 24/7 thing. Poor Apollo Crews and Dominic Dijakovic, or however, whatever it is, T-Bar, are now chasing that geek title. But Tozawa and Tamina make me laugh. Max Dupree? Is this chicken crap being turned into chicken salad because he does the WWE promo style so well? I like him. I'm going to admit it. I really liked the Ronin Bronin promo by Riddle and Nakamura. I thought that was funny. I thought that was cute. I dug that. The only thing I didn't like from somebody I like was Becky Lynch. I hate the stuttering, oh, I'm so angry and nervous that I'm stuttering my words type of gimmick that she now does in her promos. Her Seth Rollins weird type of wardrobe off, I'm a little done with because she's a gorgeous woman. I do like Asuka just being crazy all the time. All she wants to do is dance and hit people with her butt. She's great. I love her. But I wish they'd give her a little bit more in this feud. And I wish they'd give Bianca a little bit more in this feud instead of that. And that's all she does. What else? There was one other thing that I really popped. Oh, I think Cody Rhodes is doing fine in this. The Seth promo. I thought the pull apart was interesting. Seth wearing a women's set of pajamas. Okay, fine. I'm ready for this feud to be over, though, and I think Cody's the one guy who's going to really bring it in a cell match here.
Yeah,
anyway, thoughts from you.
I just need Cody to go over the Seth Rollins.
Yeah,
3-0. Like this doesn't need to go on any further. I just don't have any trust in WWE to tell long form stories.
I agree.
It's so. While the Cody stuff has been consistent to this point, I just keep waiting for the bottom to fall out.
The Ezekiel thing working is funny to me in so many ways.
Here's why it works. I was thinking about this.
Because of KO?
Yes, but okay. Also because there's this subtle thing that Elias/Ezekiel is doing in his performance. It's like a satire of the generic early 1990s white meat baby face.
Okay, yeah.
That it is weirdly nuanced and subtle in a way that I would never associate with Elias and Ezekiel.
And he's gotten better at his baby face comebacks and his baby face cheering on the apron thing. He really has.
Yes. And like, I don't know. Like, there's like this clear, like, wink. It works.
There's a gleam in his eye when he's doing this, almost as if he's self-aware about it.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Let's pick winners for Hell in a Cell, and then we'll end with NXT burn down the house and God. Its foundation and everything involved with that, because we do have some fun stuff in the NXT world, at least.
NXT Salt the Earth.
Salt the Earth, yes. That's a perfect name for it. Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell. I think we both think Cody should go over and will go over.
Yeah, I'm going to say should and would.
Bianca Belair versus Asuka versus Becky Lynch, triple threat match. This could possibly steal the show, I think, in terms of being a fun match. But I can't see any other ending other than Bianca pins Asuka here.
Yeah, I Bianca pins Asuka. I think this is a fun match that maybe, like, you know, over delivers by the standards of the card, but no, like, I don't see Asuka winning here.
Bobby Lashley in a handicap match against almost an MVP. 2-on-1 handicap match. You know what that means, Chris? There's no DQ, so that means Cedric Alexander's coming out, right?
Yeah, obviously. And the question then becomes, are the odds overcommitted?
Oh, come on. It's Lashley. Of course they are.
I was setting it up with the weird past tense. Yeah, I know. It's fine. It's okay.
I feel shame.
I'll rise above the scenario.
I feel shame.
Yeah, you should. But okay. I rise above the scenario.
Ezekiel versus Kevin Owens.
I think Ezekiel has to win here.
I think he has to win, but I don't think he does. That's a weird thing. I think they're going to blow this. I think they're going to have Kevin Owens win this. I don't know how. Probably Sami Zayn helps. Who knows?
Okay, but so it's like a roll-up finish. Because he can't be like... Ezekiel can't actually get pinned by Owens, I don't think. I think I think it has to be
it's one
like,
of those weird things he loses by interference. So, he doesn't really lose his heat. Blah, blah, blah.
Right. No. I think if he does lose, it's got to be like a protected loss.
Theory versus everybody's favorite WWE malcontent, Mustafa Ali. Dare they give him the United States title here, Chris?
No, I think Theory sucks this one out somehow.
I agree. I think Ciampa shows up. And then in a mixed six-person tag, Finn Balor, AJ Styles, and newly minted movie star Liv Morgan taking on The Judgment Day, Edge, Damian Priest, and Rhea Ripley.
I think Judgment Day's got to win this.
Liv's eating this pin again.
Yeah, I think so. There's no way that Judgment Day doesn't win that match.
And I assume it's probably, you know, they tease intergender stuff because probably a guy ruins it for Liv Morgan and then Rhea Ripley pins her in some way. That's my opinion. Or you know what? You do the opposite. Rhea Ripley could low blow Finn Balor or AJ Styles. I could see that too. Because neither of those guys need the win, even though they're bigger stars. So, yeah. This is going to be one I skip live. Tell me if it's good in my Twitter mentions, and then I'll go back and watch what's good. Moving on to Saturday, tomorrow. I love you. Tomorrow, you're only a day away. NXT in your house, Chris. taking good IP and salting the earth with it. In NXT world, The Rock's daughter now has a name that doesn't reference anything having to do with The Rock. Much like no generational talent is allowed to reference the brand name of which you should probably be using any goodwill. Her name, I believe, is what? Ava Devine, I believe, is the name there. But also, you know,
sheesh.
Santina Marella's daughter is in there. That's the Ariana, what's her face name? I forgot her name, but it's plain as day. We had this tournament. I had a question for you and I forgot what it was. Let me look it up real quick in your DMs, because I sent you a snarky comment. I wanted to know the real answer to this, because it was weighing on my mind, Chris, and it shouldn't have been, to be honest with you. Where is it? Tuesday. I can't find the joke. Never mind. It's a stupid joke. It's about what's her face being an actual porn star in real life. But
Kiana James.
Kiana James, who is awful yes. sexy. That's her gimmick.
It has the Brainiac gimmick has no bearing whatsoever in the ring.
Not Alexandra York.
She's not outsmarting Ivy Nile in the ring at any point during this match. She didn't outsmart her opponent at any point during this match. She just comes in and says 12%, some like random decimal number or something, and that's supposed to be enough to get this gimmick over. At least the genius had a chalkboard on the outside of the ring and would like draw up like Hulk Falls. Like, This is, if you're going to do this gimmick, they have to, like,
it's so demeaning to the women too. That, oh, look, we're calling you smart. No, you're not. This is a porn. This is a porn premise. That's what this is.
God, it's so
hey there, Mr. Johnson. I know you called me here in the meeting, but I have filing to do.
And I'm like a sucker for like the genius style gimmick. I like those gimmicks. I'm a big fan of those. I just think that if you're going to do it, you have to actually do it. She has to use her brain to outsmart her opponents. And Ivy Nile was a perfect foil for her to get the annoying victory leading into the pay-per-view. Ivy Nile's skin. This is a great opportunity to get this gimmick over.
Yeah, I'm here for the spreadsheets in wrestling type of gimmick, where you're calculating how to beat your opponent and stuff like that. Especially since it's so big in sports now, nobody does it correctly. It's amazing to me. Also of note in our snark, new NXT UK Tag Team Champions, Chris. It has happened.
A dream has been realized.
Yes. I don't know whose dream it was, but yes.
Ashton, I got a lot of dreams. Recently I've switched to sleeping on my side. I'm dreaming much more often now.
Ashton Smith and Oliver Carter, a.k.a. Bootleg Kofi and Whoop Guy, as we so lovingly call them here on the show, are your NXT Tag Champions after it looks like Mustache Mountain is no more.
Whoop,
Chris, a 1 hour retrospective on their career, please go.
Yeah, no, and that 1 hour retrospective will be out next week. It's known as Whoop, There It Is. I think you guys are gonna love this. We're gonna be taking a look back at all the classic feuds, all the ups and the downs between Smith and Carter. What makes Ollie and Ashy, as I like to call them, tick. We're going to get into all of it here. Jeff and I will be doing that. It'll be up on the Patreon here, so make sure you sub up this
one. We're going to finally update the Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, we are. We're going to be taking a look back at Whoop Guy and the other one.
Bootleg Kofi, yes.
Yes.
Yes. So we have to get to this. Six matches for your watching pleasure. and here we go. What should be a fun match, I do think. Cameron Grimes versus Carmelo Hayes with Trick Williams. This feud will never die. Singles match for the NXT North American Championship.
It's not it that also I don't will like... never heat up.
Yeah, that's the problem. It never heats up, but it never dies either. Stakes are never raised, except for the title. At least give me bounties or cash payments or stock options or something. Chris, is it time to stop the Cameron Grimes did it for his daddy and give the belt back to Carmelo?
You want to say yes, but you almost like think like maybe a double turn or something is coming. I don't even know how to read, like, because Grimes is not over at all and Carmelo kind of is.
I agree. It's so weird.
If I was going to book this, I would book this as a double turn. We're like, I don't think they're going to do this, but it just seems to be like that's where the energy is right now. I'm going to say Grimes retains.
I'm going to say it's a switch and they give it to Carmelo. I think Trick Williams interferes and then starts the breakup of Trick and Carmelo not being able to trust each other.
Okay.
Because it's like, hey, I wanted to win on my own, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, whatever, because that's what they do.
Oh, so we're going to baby. We are starting to baby.
I think we're going to baby Carmelo here. I think you are correct. It does start a double turn in some ways. Tony D'Angelo, Channing Stacks Lorenzo, and Troy Two Dimes Donovan. The red shirts have names. It's so cute. Versus Shake Them Ropes darlings. Let's face it. Legado del Fantasma, Santos Escobar, Cruz del Toro, and Joaquin Wilde with the lovely Electra Lopez at their side. Who wins the racial gang wars that WWE can never get away from?
Guy, you know, and what an exquisite and dramatic presentation it was on that yacht.
This is just like, you know, 1920s New York with the Italians and the...
Yes, yes, I was thinking that. It's like Gangs of New York, the movie. I love it. I think that, like, D'Angelo wins, and, like, this is the start of Escobar becoming a babyface.
Huh. Okay. I think this is Legado del Fantasma's swan song, I hope. I hope they're getting brought up, finally. But I do believe the Italians win this. I am of the opinion...
Bada boom! That's what they say in those movies.
I do think the teased return of one Fabian Aichner in his new role here, he'll probably be called Giovanni the Cleaner.
I was thinking the Whacker.
The Whacker?
Yeah, he whacks people, you know, like in the movies. You know, someone's bad, so they got to whack him off.
Why do they call you? Oh, my God. Why do you do this to me? Oh my God. I hate you so much right now. All right. For the tag team championships, Pretty Deadly, Elton Prince and Kit Wilson, or as I call them, Blonde and Brunette, taking on the Creed brothers of Brutus Creed and Julius Creed, aka Small and Short and Stocky. For the tag team titles, if Julius and Brutus Creed lose, they will leave the diamond mine. And yes, they're going to leave the diamond mine because I believe that one Roderick Strong is on the next set of NXT cuts. What do you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Roddy ends up costing Brutus and Julius here. Like, I think that's the foreshadowing that came from this week. So, yeah. Like,
okay. I did not see it. So I am not aware. So I'm not.
Yeah. No, the foreshadowing is that Julius took a belt shot from Pretty Roddy? Deadly Blonde. No, oh, from Blonde.
Okay.
Yeah, and Blonde hits Julius, and Roddy gets mad after the match, not because, like, he didn't see it, because he's like, oh, no, I know that, but I would have won by disqualification, and then I would have won the match. And so you cost me the match. We lost, like, me and Damon, whatever his name is, we lost.
Okay.
Yeah, but we could have won by disqualification, and so you cost us. So I think Roddy cost him the match.
Gotcha. For the women's tag team title, Toxic Attraction, Gigi Dolin and JC Jane taking on perennial number one contenders by now, who can never win, Katana Chance, I remember the former Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter. Do Katana Chance and Caden Carter finally win these ridiculous tag titles that don't mean anything?
I think they do. I don't think their title reign amounts to anything, but I think they actually win.
I would agree. I think so. For the women's championship on the NXT side, Mandy Rose was turning into the Nick Bockwinkel of NXT, taking on Wendy Chu, who is rumored to be on her way to the main roster to become a Dragon Lady again to help Xia Li. Y'all know I love me some Wendy Chu. She makes me laugh. She should not be fighting for the title. Mandy Rose wins.
Yeah, Mandy's winning this. So, especially when you're talking about the other half of Toxic Attraction losing the belts, I think Mandy, it makes it even more clear that Mandy's winning them.
And finally, in the most gripping supernatural science fiction story of our time, Bron Breakker, your NXT champion.
God, this go-home promo from Joe Gatt. You didn't see the show, Hawkins.
I did not.
If you had seen it, I'll tell you what. You'd be thinking about Joe Gacy in a completely different light, Jeff. This is fit. Perhaps. No. That's the Vinny Bumbat storyline. This was just fantastic. Joe Gacy delivered a promo for the ages, Jeff.
According to Chris, Joe Gacy delivered a promo for the ages. But
for the ages,
there is a stipulation on this match. If Bron Breakker is disqualified, he will lose the championship, which to me means the grizzled young druids attack Joe Gacy at some point.
Oh, they attack Joe Gacy?
Yes.
Oh. Cool.
They just punch him to get Bron Breakker disqualified.
Oh, I see. And then Joe Gacy wins the title by disqualification.
Yes.
You think Joe Gacy wins the title here?
Yes.
Wow. I don't think that happens.
Okay, good. Because I'd much rather he not.
I watched this promo, Jeff, and I'll tell you, it was one for the ages. I said that literally moments ago. It can't not be true now.
Was those ages 2 through 5 with the IQ of 12?
It doesn't matter, and IQ progresses. That's not an appropriate way of looking at IQ, Hawkins. But it is important to remember that Bron Breakker is probably going to retain his title here. That's how I want to end that sentence.
Good, because Bron Breakker, I think, is the guy. This is what they do with. They should be pushing guys as tough badasses to the moon, and instead we're doing Kane is trapped me in the in a car. Or in a basement, and he's stalking me. Ooga, ooga, booga. And nobody gets over that way.
No. Joe Gacy does not say ooga, booga, booga.
I'm being sarcastic.
No, I know.
Step on that joke. I will overcome it.
No. Oh. Now you know. The shoe is finally on your foot, Hawkins.
The shoe is on the other foot, too.
So you wish.
I do like her. Sleeping through the table had me howling. I got to admit, I saw that. I watched it about 30 times. But unfortunately, she is not championship material, unless if it's an ironic title reign in which she gets rolled up by somebody they introduce on like Tuesday. But if you choose to watch the graps, enjoy. If you choose to skip and watch later, totally understand. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling, Wrestling Network podcast for every taste in wrestling, no matter how weird. I've started listening to the WCW Thunder Pod because they're going to start doing something on their Patreon for a retrospective Clash of the Champions, and I'm all about that. Join their Patreon as well. But I'm also on another Patreon. I'm on the Fight Game Media Patreon. $5. You get an extra show out of me. Hot takes for AEW Dynamite. That show drops about an hour and a half after Dynamite finishes. It's pretty good. It's me and Paul Fontaine, who now has COVID because a lot of people got COVID at Double or Nothing. But anyways, Chris is reinvigorated in politics. He looks to be chatting with you all more a little bit about politics.
I'm on Discord, at least. I'm not chatting on Twitter.
Well, he's going to plug his Discord after he plugs his Twitter, which is at DWATG.
Yeah, the Twitter is at DWATG. The Discord's not open, but it's like Nov, N-O-V. So search for that. I'm on there.
Sell it. Hard sell.
There's a new Don't Worry About the Government that I taped a few days ago. It's already up on the Patreon, patreon.com/DWATG. And it'll be up on Spotify and iTunes soon enough. Don't push me. Don't prod me. If you wanted it, you can go to patreon.com/DWATG. You don't need to yell at me.
We'll try not to be like that.
Well, that's coming along nicely. Great.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.